Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to Spawn on Me. I am your non-captain, Sharif Jackson. Our captain Khalif Adams is not here. He is off sail on the high seas in his new employment. He has officially announced it, so I don't think it's a spoiler that he's part of the Intel gaming division. So congrats to him. He's enjoying all that stuff. Not congrats though to my other host, I don't know, he might have had lunch with Mr. Trump, with our president wearing a MAGA hat. He is the Baron of Bourbon, Cicero Holmes. How you doing, C?
Sneezes is in the building.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yes,
yes.
Yeah, yes.
Has returned.
So for people that like don't know, C was supposed to be on the last show. Like, he showed up, but when we were trying to start recording, that man just could not stop sneezing. Like, it was, and it wasn't like small sneezes. I mean, it was like violently shaking sneezes, and I was just like, yo, like, you don't gotta record, man. Like, it was brutal.
I gotta be here for the people, man. Yeah, and I don't sneeze like no punk.
It was serious. I was like, yo, you know, and like, I like, you sneeze a little bit during the Ride Was a Waterdeep that we recorded, yeah, like, yes, that following Sunday.
Yes,
but even that was nothing compared to what you were doing. Oh man. Yeah. Sneezes.
Yes.
Hey, always good to get a new name, man. I think you have the most names probably out of everybody combined, out of all of us combined.
I might.
But hey, another one to the belt.
Add another one. Yeah.
Add another one to the back of your studded jacket.
Right, exactly. Yeah. These tissues give me power.
Yeah, Are you feeling better, though?
Yeah. Springtime and the fall, there are beautiful times to be outside, but things start to grow and things start to die, and my ancestral powers of my nose it picks up on new life and the ending of life and is allergic to it all.
Wow, your ancestral powers. Like, is your nose like the heart-shaped herb? Like,
yes, it might be. Nose conda forever.
Nose nostril conda.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Maybe, you could call me Nostradamus.
like it brings you to the ancestral plane.
Yes. Like, oh. So some of those sneezes brought me to the ancestral plane. So
Like, you couldn't record. Now it makes sense. It makes sense.
Exactly.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, I was also out for the count for like a good week. And I'm feeling a little better now as well. It's something interesting when you like me, like, I'm a tutor, so I'm in like, you know, four or five different households a day. So if any one of them are sick, you know, like, I'm going to get it and I'm going to spread it to the rest of the people. So
patient zero.
I'm basically patient zero. So like, I try to use all kind of like my hand sanitizer game is on point. Yeah. Like, I take these additional like vitamin C things and all that kind of stuff. But still, if something hits you, it hits you, and there's really nothing you can do about it. I wanted to do a couple shout outs before we dig into the stuff. First, another shout out. I know this happened a little bit ago, but another shout out to Ka Sterling and the rest of the folks that participated in the Spawn for Good Vote Riders thing, where we raised, I believe, over $7,000
in 48 hours.
Man. Yeah, exactly. So our goal was $5,000, and we raised over $7,000, to help fight voter ID and general voter suppression stuff.
Right, yeah.
It was our first Spawn for Good that we did not do on MLK weekend.
Yes.
And I think, even though I couldn't participate in the streaming side of it, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Wanted to shout that out. And also, we announced on the last show that Tying in the Past would no longer be on the show, and just wanted to give her a shout out for all she's done.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Hopefully she is still listening and a fan of what we do. So wanted to give her a shout out as well.
Yeah, shout out to Worcester, Mass.
Yeah, Worcester.
Tanya is. Maybe by the time she leaves it, she'll be able to pronounce Worcester.
I was like, yo, I hope she does not mispronounce it to the people there, because she kept calling it Worcester, yes, which is how it's spelled.
Right.
Like, if you ever look up Worcester, Mass, it is spelled like Worcester sauce.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's a weird thing. But she's like presenting at the different games conference.
Yes.
Out there, as she presents everywhere, pretty much. So, shout out to her.
Yeah.
And with that, I want to give the wheel to C. He has a couple of games that he's been digging into that he wants to share with the party people. So C, I would take it away.
Caesars, take the wheel.
It's not a game.
I hope you guys like that. I feel like I haven't been able to talk to Picargo in a long, long time. And while I haven't been here, I have been able to play some games. I've definitely always been in Picargo. First and foremost, I've played some Madden. Those of you who were there on Thursday got to hear us talk to Ben Harmilla about Madden 19. Madden 19 is what's the good word for it? I guess it's not necessarily controversial, but it is divisive. There are some very, very good things in it, but the player motion is great when it works, but unfortunately there are a lot of times where it doesn't work, and that takes you out of the immersion from the game. It is extra jarring, because when it works, it's so beautiful that you really feel like you're, you know, watching a game on Sunday, like you're actually playing football. I think, you know, a lot of that had to do with the fact that the game was released a couple of weeks early, which meant that they had to push up timelines. And I hope to see that towards the latter part of this year, that the game, you know, through patches and updates and everything else, that the game is going to be working much, much better. And, you know, that kind of stuff does happen. I've also been playing a game that I talked about. If you guys followed our coverage from E3 this year, the game that I was most excited about was a game out of this German studio named Didalic called State of Mind. It's a cyberpunk, futuristic adventure game. I've been playing it. I haven't finished it yet, but it is fascinating. It is from a story perspective, it is there are things that it's doing that I haven't really even seen great films in that genre do.
Wow.
It is a really, really great story. And the art style is very unique. There are some bugs within the animations, and it's, you know, it's not a perfect game by any stretch of the imagination, but it is definitely, definitely worth a play. If it continues on this vein, it will be on my short list for Cheddar Bay Biscuits.
Wow, really?
Yeah. It is super good. It is super good.
That's awesome.
It's super good from a story, like getting you thinking and really kind of inhabiting the world. And it is surprisingly beautiful.
Is there like like, what can, is there some things you can tell us that aren't like spoilers? I can
So
into what it is.
So the game is about a about this guy who wakes up from a car accident, and he's looking for his wife and kids, and his wife and kids are not home. And he, it, you know, you're set in like 2050, and Berlin, and okay. He finds out that his wife and kids are not home, but the house robot tells him that they went out, and it turns out that him and his wife are having marital issues, and okay. She left him. But then there are, but then he starts having dreams, and he's dreaming about some other guy. And it turns out that that other guy is part of their like Matrix world.
Is this like Total Recall kind of?
So there are definitely elements of different sci-fi stories that you've seen within this story. But they don't necessarily go where you think they'll go.
Okay.
It's probably about 12 hours, so it's not terribly long. And a lot of the time it feels like a walking simulator, but it definitely is not one of those. There are some puzzles that not a lot of them are very hard. There are some action sequences, but those are kind of later in the game, but they are there. This game is about the story. It's about the aesthetic. It's about the hidden beauty of the world. And more than it is about, the gameplay, even though, you know, like that sounds like a knock against it, but it really isn't. Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. I'm definitely gotta check it out.
So I've been playing that. I've been playing, kind of in order. I'll do this. Insomniac's Marvel Spider-Man on the PS4. In fact, I bought the PS4 Pro, the Spider-Man bundle. So I've got that very beautiful, garish. So
some looks great.
Yeah, some say garish red PS4 with the Spider-Man logo on it. It's an amazing looking console in my eye, and that controller is really dope. I'm really happy with that purchase. But I'm more happy with Spider-Man. That game is amazing.
Okay.
I think so the fun, like, I haven't finished it yet. I do know that I'm a terrible human being. I do know what happened.
Spoiled yourself.
Right. I spoiled myself. I kind of had a sense of things were spoiled for me already, because I saw a photo of a thing that happened, and it was supposed to be innocuous, but it made me think, and I was like, oh, okay, this is what's happening. Okay, I get it. And I just spoiled the rest of it, but I'm waiting to finish the game because I'm just having so much. I don't want to stop playing it. And, the thing I love about, I think that game is definitely on my short, like State of Mind may be on my short list. Spider-Man is definitely on my short list.
Oh, it's on a lot of people's short list. It's definitely. I had a phenomenal time with Spider-Man.
Yeah. And for me, here's the thing I don't think anybody said about this game. This game is the perfect. It's the perfect game in terms of accessibility. It strikes the perfect balance, in my opinion, between accessibility and fun factor, and you know, whatever that Halo, the thing that the Halo guys said that they used,
five seconds of fun.
It strikes the perfect balance of it. Do you realize that 10% of the people that as of 2 weeks ago, 10% of the people that own Spider-Man on the PS4 have platinumed it.
10%?
That's yeah.
really high.
That's that is
more than I thought it would be.
Incredibly high.
Yeah, that's got to be maybe the highest. It is. Well, like given the amount of units it sold.
It is the highest of any of the AAA exclusive games.
Yeah, that is high because there's a lot of unlockables in that game.
Yeah, but the thing about it is it's not impossible to platinum.
It just takes time.
Right.
And I probably would have platinum it if Destiny 2 wasn't out, to be honest.
Right. And it's one of those things where there are things that people do, or there are, you know, ways that people are built where there are things that are difficult in the game, but I think it really hits that perfect balance of being just an overall super accessible game. I'm not the Twitch gamer that I was. You know, I'm 42 years old, so like I just don't have the reflexes anymore, nor do I have the desire to be super ace A1, put it on the hardest difficulty, maximum gamer. I don't have the time nor the inclination to do that anymore, and I could just sit down, play Spider-Man, feel like the game never got too hard, immerse myself in this wonderful world, and just enjoy a spectacular story, pardon the pun, but spectacular story.
A great story.
Yeah.
A great story.
It is Spider-Man. Oh, man, really good. The last game that I'll talk about in this series of games that I've been playing is the Microsoft exclusive Forza Horizon 4, which it is also, you know, again, if you've been following Spawn on Me for a couple of years, you know that I definitely have an affinity for those games. They're always at least on my short list for sports game of the year. This game is the best of the ones that have come out.
This is the best Forza Horizon.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
So I'll say it from this perspective. Vanilla Forza Horizon, because that Hot Wheels, when that Hot Wheels dropped, that was a game changer for Forza Horizon 3. But from, you know, vanilla Forza Horizon, Forza Horizon 3 versus Forza Horizon 4, Horizon 4, I like what they've done with changing up the format a little, the seasons. The game looks phenomenal on the 1X. No, it's not 4K 60. But it's 4K 30 or performance 1080p 60, and I've got the best of both worlds, and Reef, I'm sure you've got the best of all worlds. But I'm playing on my Xbox One X 4K 30, and on my PC, because of Play Anywhere, I'm playing it 1080p 60 on my PC.
Nice,
and it looks and it feels fantastic. Yeah. I think I will equally split time between both the console and the PC playing this game.
Yeah, it's like I haven't played enough of it to say it's the best one. It's the best looking one for sure. Mm-hmm. But I think what is coloring my experience a bit is Forza Horizon 3. It was great when it came out, but I really fell in love with it with the expansions.
Right.
So right. Like the I forgot the name of the first one, like the winter one. Like,
Yeah.
That one.
Winter Mountain.
Yeah, I forgot what it's called, but that one and that Lego Hot Wheels one.
Yeah.
Are incredible.
Yeah.
So I feel I feel like I need to see how it expands. But yeah, Forza Horizon's great.
Yeah.
It's really great.
Yeah, it is. So it is. I've always been a fan of racing games. Racing games are great for, you know, as console sellers, as showpieces, as things to kind of tout the power of video games. But cars are fun. I think I'm a better driver. It's going to sound weird, that I can drive more aggressively, more confidently as a result of me playing.
That's very weird.
Yes.
What are you saying?
As a result of playing racing games with the steering wheel and understanding the physics of driving, and you know, just you know, from a very, very mechanical level, as a result of playing driving games. So developing spatial awareness at, you know, higher velocities as a result of playing racing games. But racing games get tedious because it's still the same thing over and over again, and it really isn't, even though there are a variety of tracks and you know, sometimes different elements, you're still fundamentally kind of doing the exact same thing. And unless they add some extras to it, it just kind of does get kind of boring. But driving in a locale where you can go off road and you can do all these other things, and you don't always have to race, you can just explore, makes the Horizon series a lot more appealing to me. And then when you add, you know, whether you like the musical choices or not, you can develop an affinity for musical styles that are sometimes out of your comfort zone, as a result of exploring stuff that happens in the Horizon series, but also just going for a drive.
Yeah.
Like, you could just do it. Part. Yeah, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, I was a little worried because, like, the kind of Australian Horizon 3, I thought was just a better... Like, when I first heard that this one was going to be in the UK, I was like, all right, I'm going to, like, completely lose that feeling of being, like, out in the open and, right, you know, doing that stuff. Right. But they really do it. Like, you still feel that way.
Yeah.
Like, I guess when they said it was in the UK, my thought was the whole game would be in, like, central London.
Right, you know, exactly. Yeah, like, you got Midnight Club, right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's totally not. And mm-hmm. I also want to give a shout out to the weather in the game.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, the seasons and the weather and stuff, they nailed it. It's amazing. And like usual, this is a game that is not getting the props that it deserves.
Right, right.
I think as
it's sold well. It has sold well.
Oh yeah. Well, but like, these games are always going to sell well. I think all the first party games are going to sell well, because even though there's a lot of hoopla about how far ahead Sony is, still a lot of goddamn Xboxes out
there. Yes, there are.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. Like, right. Yeah. It's still a record number of Xboxes.
Yes. So. Yeah. Exactly. So, like,
in terms of where they, you know, where they were compared to the previous generation.
Yes.
You know. Yep. Yes. You know.
Cool. Anything else you want to add to that?
Yeah. No. I just want to say that Horizon is super good. The persistent season change, this persistent online world that everyone exists in, is a stroke of genius. The fact that you've got seasonal events is like, these are the things that the foundation of Forza Horizon 4 is better than any Forza Horizon series to date. And I dare say any racing game of this style that has ever been. So, you know, I'm not going to compare it to the Gran Turismos or the Dirts or the Forza Motorsports of the world, but the Midnight Clubs and the Test Drive Unlimiteds and you know, stuff in that same genre. This particular version that we have to play today, far and away the best.
Nice. Yeah, I think Microsoft has a nice feather in his cap with this. And, man, they've really kind of, like, almost perfected this genre of sort of like slightly arcadey racers, I guess. Right. I just don't know what else they could do. Like,
well, we said that last year.
I mean, like, unless keep making it look better, but man, it's just it's amazing. What a great team that puts this this game together.
Yeah, shout out to Playground Games.
Yeah, for real. All right. So thanks, C, for running through your list of things. I want to jump into something that I've been playing a lot of, which is Shadow of the Tomb Raider. So Lara Croft's third outing from the Crystal Dynamics rebooted Tomb Raider series. Probably, if you counted all the games, it's probably like the 20th Tomb Raider or something like that. But I did get a review code for this, so I wanted to divulge that up front. This game, when I first started it and I tweeted this out, I was a little meh on it for the first hour or two. It retreaded a lot of similar stuff that we had already experienced in both Tomb Raider and Rise of the Tomb Raider. There's a plane crash. You sneak around and you kind of hear some conversations. You have to escape from sort of like a harrowing kind of situation right at the beginning. I mean, it just felt like my whole thought for the first hour or like so was, wow, I guess they finally ran out of like cool things to do.
Right.
You know? And it's not that it's bad. It's just that if you played and enjoyed those first two as I have, it just felt a little stale at that point.
Sure.
But the game really, really starts to pick up, I would say, about the fourth hour or so. It took me about 14 hours to beat this game. And I would say, like, it has a very strong middle, and also there's one of the things that really stands out about this game is they do attempt to make some stances on sort of colonialism and theft of indigenous property and the fact, you know, and Lara gets called out on it both by her friend in the game, Jonah, who was also in the last two, and by like the villain in the game. Really? You know, like there's a lot of this like you think you could come in and take whatever you want kind of stuff. It's not, I wish it was a little more aggressive and a little more in your face, and but they do touch on it a bit, and it's pretty interesting because I was kind of taken aback. And like I'm gonna do kind of a YouTube series, a Game Looks Good, on where they went and how far I think that they should have gone, but I was pretty impressed by it. But I must say that part of it did tend to be not necessarily supported in the rest of the narrative. So like they would make a great statement about it, but then you'd play where Lara's like, you know, the only white person in this random town of like a natives, and everybody's like treating her like she's like Jesus, like, you know.
Wow.
And there's like the trope of, you know, like you know who's gonna die when they introduce like this person.
Wow.
And yes, they're gonna die for Lara, and they're gonna say, you know, revenge me, and of course they're gonna be a marginalized person,
right?
You know, so I felt like there was a big disconnect between those two things. I like that they're trying to make these statements, but honestly I feel like the game should be built around it. Like almost when I get teased with it, it almost makes me desire it more.
Right.
So it's almost like either you don't say something at all or you go in on it. Kind of like similar to the feelings I had on Deus Ex on the Mankind like Divided stuff, where like I was like, yo, either don't mention this apartheid shit.
Right.
Or like really, really give it the treatment that it deserves.
Right.
So like that, you know, that was a definite disconnect in the game. But as far as the gameplay and stuff, I really, really like how this game was probably the least focused on combat out of the three, which I like. I don't think Lara Croft games should be heavy on like a combat. And the parts where there are, they make sense in the narrative. Like if I'm infiltrating a secret base, I expect to see people with guns and, you know, and like military, you know. And there's one part where she literally, you know, where she gets a gun and just goes crazy and you just gun down tons and tons of folks. But it makes sense given what just happened and okay. sort of the location that you're in. Whereas in the other games, it was like you just got to a point where she was just, where she was like Nathan Drake, just killing hundreds and hundreds of people. And,
right.
and it seemed disconnected from the story.
Right.
So I do like that they try to provide a justification for it at this particular part. And I won't spoil what the part is. But yeah, after I went through it, I was like, yo, that actually felt like right, you know? But for most of the game, like you're sneaking around and you're covering yourself in mud. And if you take people out, it's like a stealth way. You know, so I think that that fits this iteration of like a Lara a lot better, you know, and there's also a lot more like animal combat and that kind of stuff where there's, you know, tigers and rare animals, which, you know, I think is one thing I missed from the last two, which was, you know, and that was a huge factor in the early Tomb Raider games was like animals.
Right.
You
know? Sure.
And the final thing that I'll say on it is I really, really enjoy. So like there's like the regular puzzles and stuff, but there's also these challenge tombs. And in the previous games, especially in Rise, I felt like I just ran into them. Like they were like, if you made a left instead of a right, like you ran into one. They weren't that hard to find. In this game, they're really, really creatively placed where you really feel like rewarded for exploring when you find one.
Okay.
You know, so I really, really like that. Like they were just far enough out of the way that like you didn't have to do something completely crazy to get them. But if like you just went off a little bit and maybe saw something in the distance and like I went to it, you ended up getting a new piece of gear, you know, or like a new weapon. So I really like the placement of the challenge tombs here.
Hmm.
So yeah, I mean, if you were a fan of the first two, I think it's a no brainer. If you haven't played them, I think it's a little, you might want to think a little bit more about it because I think for like one, if you're looking for a lot of combat, don't get this game. If you like puzzlers though, I think this is a solid buy. You know, yeah. Have you thought about getting into this one? See, I know that you are a big fan of Rise of the.
I will almost certainly get this game at some point. It most probably will be when it goes on sale. I still have a couple of other games that I want to invest time into before we really, really hit the crux of this winter gaming season, because it's going to be heavy, and you know, unfortunately, that was a game. There are very few games on my list, and Tomb Raider was not one of the games that I felt I needed to play this winter.
I feel the same way about Assassin's Creed. Like,
right.
People are raving about it, but I'm like, still feel like I could dive back into Origins at this point. So I'm just kind of delaying it a bit.
Right.
But yeah, I think Tomb Raider, I don't think it's going to be on a lot of people's radars because of exactly what you said, but it's really good.
Right.
And you know, the criticisms that I mentioned are like, they would have made it like, not a perfect game, but a closer to perfect game.
Sure.
And they just don't hit that part. But
right.
And also, I almost forgot, one other thing that really annoys me about the game is, and this has been a constant thing with Tomb Raider games, but I think they need to be kind of retired, is these like death animations where she's getting like impaled or right. like decapitated.
That's
or,
their like, thing, man.
Like they it feels so egregious in this game though. Like it's almost like they go out of their way to do it.
Well, it's almost like it's perverse or grotesque to the point where it's like it's comical almost. You know, like that there's this morose or macabre feeling, macabre comedy to it all. Almost like what was that game? Dragon's Lair. where
that was definitely comedy.
Right. Well, yes, of course that was comedy, but like you know, they'd have those crazy death animations where it would be the cutscene and you would be like skeletons and he'd be just pissed off. Right. Yeah. He's just pissed off at you, just kind of disgusted with your inability to play the game well. And I think that like this is their version of that.
I guess, but it takes me out of it. Like it's one thing if I'm in a dangerous area and I can clearly see stuff and you show me getting killed by it, that's fine. Right. I got really pissed. There's like one part where there's essentially a tsunami and you have to jump on like different like floating things.
Right.
If you miss a jump, you will hit the water and somehow get impaled on like a stick. And if you look down, there's no sticks. You know what I'm saying? So it's like they invent shit for you to get grotesquely killed. I don't know. It just feels like it's like too much. And it especially on parts where I've died like multiple times, you keep seeing the same animation over and over again. Like, sure. I don't know. I think it's time to let them go.
Rule of threes.
And I did see an article based on this. I believe it was on Polygon where they had a similar thought process as well. Right, it's just.
So just where's, get rid of it, yo. Where's this game set?
So it's set in a bunch of different places. Part of it is in Cozumel in Mexico.
Right.
Part of it is in Peru. There's some great settings and like you do feel like you're in, like they definitely nail like the jungle habitat and like that kind of stuff. I actually really prefer it to kind of like the Soviet stuff from Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Right.
I mean, the setting is beautiful. I've been posting pictures on Twitter because the photo mode is outstanding.
Right.
It looks great. It looks absolutely great. It's good.
What console are you playing on?
So I'm playing on the PC.
Okay.
And it runs pretty well. Like my PC is definitely starting to show its age a little bit. Like I can't quite run things as flawlessly as I used to. But even with dropping some of the graphic settings down, it still looks really good. I think it would definitely shine on like a 4K HDR kind of like display because a lot of it is about, you know, being out in the open with the sun coming through the trees and all that stuff. So like, I'm sure that would look amazing on like a higher level of display. And so, it looks great on my monitor. Very responsive. Like the dialogue and the motion cap and the acting is great. I mean, it's not quite at like Spider-Man's level, which I consider to be just, I mean,
right. Spider-Man's at Naughty Dog like, level.
It's unbelievable. So it's not quite at that level, but it is good. You know, it's I think it's slightly better than the other Tomb Raiders.
Okay.
It's dope.
All right.
So I wanted to jump from that to jump to another review because I've had a couple weeks so far with what Nintendo's online service, which they rolled out. So as a reminder, for $20 a month, you get access to their stuff, which includes, online multiplayer, you know, which like was free. So it's essentially the same thing and now they're charging for it. And you get access to classic virtual console games that you can play online, and you get all your save data backed up to the cloud. So if you break your system or you lose your system, then you can get it, and like you don't lose all your data like you used to. I really try to temper my expectations with this. Like for $20 a year, I wasn't expecting them to like make the multiplayer or the connections better. You know,
right.
But I must say it does feel weird when you have had a free service for a long time and the connections are good. Like every time I play like Splatoon or like Overcooked and stuff. I never have a problem with lag or like disconnections and like a stuff. Well, I rarely do, I should say. Right. It still feels weird when you pay for the service and it's like the exact same. Like, I don't know. I know they didn't say it would be improved, so I shouldn't expect it. But it just feels weird. Like, I feel like that's kind of an impossible thing that I don't think they can message their way out of. That, you know, they're kind of like, your free time's up, you know? Right. And, like, $20 is not a lot, you know? Like, I paid it, like, without even thinking.
Right.
You know? But it does feel weird, you know, because it's, like, for that. And, you know, of course, you know, the it's not like there's, you know, parties and the voice chat is still through the app, which is atrocious, right? And like all that stuff. So yeah, I mean, to me, the biggest thing that I get out of this, honestly, is like the save data, you know? Right. I feel like having that sense of security is dope. Funny enough, not all games support it, which is kind of weird. Like Nintendo's own Splatoon 2 does not support the save data backup. Their statement was that they were worried about people hacking the backup and like cheating, you know, and like inflating their stats. And like, I'm like, so what? Like that's such a small minority of people that would do that. Like,
right.
It's just a boneheaded thing.
Now, I mean, would someone gain a competitive advantage as a result of doing
it? Yeah. Well, like that's their concern is that people would like get a save where they unlocked everything and leveled up and then you know, dominate the multiplayer and mess up the rankings, which will always be a concern for any online system ever. Right. You know, like you just got to chalk some shit up to the game. And not use that to not do something. So it's weird. But the other save stuff is dope. I will say that the online for the Nintendo games, for like the like virtual console games, pretty shitty. Funny enough, for like the, you know, for like Mario Kart and like Splatoon and like ARMS, I've had pretty good experiences. The worst experiences that I've had have been with like River City Ransom and Super Dodgeball, like these NES 8-bit games that they've put online,
but had no inherent networking framework before.
Exactly. So like they had to build netcode to support, you know, these like ancient games, and it doesn't work well. You know, it doesn't work well. I've had a lot of drops, a lot of like super duper lag in it. And I understand that, as you said, they're building this for stuff that didn't exist, but you know, if you advertise it as a thing,
right,
it should work.
Like, it should work at least a little.
Yeah, because I'm sure you guys have tested it and did all that stuff, but it's really not that good. So if you're really looking, if that's like a main thing for you, like, you know, temper your expectations for it. So, yeah.
So, all right, a couple of questions for you, man.
What up?
So now Nintendo's online service, if you want to play a game online, you have to. There is no option but to pay for this service.
Yeah, there's a few exceptions, like Fortnite, I believe you can play without it, because they have like their own servers and stuff. Mm-hmm. But the majority, I think that's the only sort of major. Oh, I think Rocket League, I don't think you need it either. But you need it for everything else.
Huh. Okay. So, they had originally said that it was going to be free for 6 months, for the first 6 months after the release of the console, but that turned into basically 18 months.
Yep. Yeah. And like now I believe you can do like a 7-day trial, I think, if you wanted to check it out. But it's, you know, it's the same, you know, it's the same multiplayer with the save data, and the virtual console, which to me, I think for $20 is fine. Just don't expect any improvements, I guess. Like, don't like think like, whoa, like Nintendo's getting all this money, they're gonna invest it into, you know, into this thing, because they definitely appear to be ride or die on the on the app for voice chat and coordinating all that stuff. So some people were like thinking that, oh, well, they're charging now, so like they're gonna build that out. I told people, I was like, y'all,
not for $20.
Not for 20, but even if they charge like 50, like Nintendo is like very stubborn about this stuff, and they're very slow to adapt stuff. So maybe in the next console, maybe will they have something, but that's a maybe. They sold a shitload of Switches with no online.
Right.
So like, you know what I'm saying? So like, what motivation do they have to, you know, to build out something? So
The other question that I have is, how many slots do you have per game for your game, for your game saves, for your cloud data?
That's interesting. I didn't really check up on that. I don't know, actually.
So
I'm not sure.
So my understanding, and this could be wrong because it is definitely not my go-to console, but on the PlayStation 4, I know this to be the case on for MLB The Show. There is one cloud save data slot, and that's it. So if you have multiple things that you want to save, maybe you have a franchise going, or you have a road to the, you know, and a road to the show, or maybe you have a couple of road to the shows like I did, and you want to save those things to the cloud and take them with you, or you know, perhaps a new game came out that had a console connected to it, and you wanted to get that PlayStation 4 Pro because it looked beautiful like Spider-Man, but also wanted to save your data and bring that with you, you would not be able to. I'm speaking from experience. So I wonder about that.
Yeah, and like, I'm taking a look at the system now and at the site, and I don't see anything that says the number. I know that when you go to like the options, it just automatically set to automatically back up, and there's like a little green check mark near things that lets you know that like everything is like backed up. And I'm not sure. I'm not sure, because with most games that I play, I only have one save, because it's only me playing it.
Right.
So yeah, that'll be interesting, especially because they have like this, you know, they have like a family pack for the online where you can pay like $35 and like 8 people can use it.
Oh, well, that's good.
So I'm hoping that they have individual ones for each one.
Right.
So.
Right.
But So yeah, I'm not sure if there's multiple. It'll be interesting, because I know for 2K19, I have a MyGM save and a career save.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah. Well, if it's automatically backing them up, I would suspect that it's more like the Xbox, where they just, you know, all your game saves are just saved to the cloud.
That will be my guess. And the other thing that I was pretty impressed by is that they're, at least they don't advertise it as any like limit. So it's not like you have this much space. So I haven't seen anything that said like, can't back this up, or like there's a limit. And like, I have a lot of saves, and like they all went up like pretty flawlessly. I didn't even have to press a button. So I was pretty happy about that. Like, cause like I was kind of scared that there would be some convoluted like Nintendo ass process to set up the cloud saves, that it would take me like 20 minutes just to set them up, but it was all automatic. So I was
all right.
pretty happy with that. They're slowly but surely they're getting their online legs. All right.
Yeah. So one last question for you. So do you think that overall this is it's worthy enough to call it a service? And if so, based on the price, and if so, is it strictly because of, like you said, that you get these cloud saves and that's something that you didn't have before?
I mean, it is a online service in that it lets you play online. Like, as a cable service lets you watch cable, you know, like that. If you judge it like that, yes. If you judge it as like a portfolio of things, then no. Well, actually, so I must say that you can do all the like friends list and that stuff. That's not part of the online service. So like, so like, even if you don't play it, like you can use their useless friends list,
right?
You know, and you can access the eShop and download digital games and like all that stuff. So,
right.
So like, you can still do like that. So it's an online. It lets you play games online like you used to, and the save data is that cool. The virtual console I think is great, but only for single player. I mean, I've been having a blast playing these old games single player, but the online is just jacked, you know?
Right.
So yeah, I think for $20, I'm like, I'm glad y'all chose that price, you know?
Right.
It would be a hard sell at higher because then there's just inevitable like comparisons to Xbox Live and PSN, which are, you know, light years ahead. So.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they finally did something right.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, it's just get rid of that damn app, y'all. Get rid of the app. Just stop it.
Yeah.
Like Fortnite has shown that you can voice chat using a regular ass headset.
Oh, wait a minute. So you, so Fortnite's not using the voice chat? Yeah.
So like, this is the weird thing, right? So since the Switch came out, people assumed that the reason you had to use the app was because there's no hardware in the Switch that has like, you know, like the mic and all that stuff to be able to use a headset because no game used it. So like, people were like, that has to be it. You know, like they saved on the components to make the Switch cheaper, you know, and then do that, whatever. So when Fortnite came out, and this wasn't advertised, somebody just randomly plugged in their headset and found out that it worked. So there is a mic in there. You could chat just plugging a regular headset into the headphones.
Wait a minute. So you're saying headphones, like I don't even have to pull out like earbuds with a microphone.
No, if it's earbuds with a microphone.
Oh, okay.
You know, like a set of phone
things,
as long as it has, you know, like the two rings on the thing and you plug it in. Yeah, then with Fortnite you can do that.
Oh,
everything else is restricted to the app. So the hardware is there. But they're so tied to this, like, now I haven't booted up the app in like a long time. Maybe it's like miraculously you know, change into something usable. I fucking doubt it though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that thing is awful.
That's so hard.
And everybody I know that I've gamed with Switch online, we use Discord.
Yeah.
You know, we just chat over Discord.
Yeah. Why not?
So,
why
you not? Know,
why not? Yeah.
So,
I guess. So speaking of chatting over antiquated systems, or speaking of antiquated systems, our very favorite, this is derogatory, but antiquated retailing game shop, GameStop, has found a new attempt at relevancy with releasing the Sandbox. Yes, the Sandbox. The Sandbox is a YouTube channel owned by GameStop that will allow, that just focuses on user-generated content, and users, the users in question, are you. Yes, you. You, the gamer.
It's the you in the tube. You.
Yeah, you, right. The you in the tube. So basically what GameStop is offering to gamers around the world, or maybe gamers just in the United States. I think it actually is gamers just in the United States. So let me take that back.
Yes, probably is. Probably that.
Yeah. So, is the ability to discover new content and content creators, and for you to have a platform to potentially become a content creator of note yourself via making videos that you upload and share directly on the Sandbox YouTube channel. So, Reef, what do you think about that?
I mean, I like that GameStop is trying new things. Like, I like that they got into sort of the ThinkGeek stuff and they're selling all that stuff in there. It's literally the only reason I go into GameStop, like, nowadays is to buy some random figure or plushie or something like that. So I like that, you know, that they're trying new things. Like, they, you know, like, the used market is not treating them the way that it like used to, and obviously digital is big, so I like it in theory, but I'm really worried that it's just going to be a mess. The first thing is, since it's a YouTube channel, my thing is, like, do they completely own your like, if you upload a video here, is it your video, or does it, like, is it GameStop's video and they can put it in advertisements, they can clip it and mix it with other shit, you know? Like, do you have rights to anything that you put in here? Would be what I would wonder.
So it's not GameStop's video, it's the Sandbox's video. The Sandbox just happens to be owned by GameStop. It's a happy accident. The answer to your question is no, you don't have any rights to that stuff. You don't have, the only thing you have rights to is you as yourself. So the potential is that you would create content that goes viral, that is, you are so charming, and the content that you bring is so unique that millions of people sit and watch it all the time, and you become an internet household name, and then you can parlay that success to your own channel, where you have now springboarded off of this, out of the Sandbox, onto your own channel, and you are forever grateful that you American Idoled your way out of the fucking Sandbox into Kelly Clarkson land and YouTube and, you know, and YouTube fame and stardom.
Okay, so, like, you can, so you upload it under, like, your YouTube name, I guess, so people can, I don't know, whatever.
No, so you upload it on the Sandbox. So you don't use your YouTube channel at all. You upload it, and the reason that I know all of this stuff is not because I'm a Sandbox user, but I have subscribed to the Sandbox for UberCargo. Yes.
You're a Sandbox groupie.
Yes, I'm a Sandboxer. I hit him with a
Sandbox.
So you will upload directly to the Sandbox YouTube account, or, you know, you would make your submission available for the YouTube Sandbox account. You wouldn't make it available on your own personal account. You can, there is a space for you to provide your YouTube channel name, but so I guess they can easily and quickly link to your YouTube channel to say, oh, to see more videos from this person, go there. But I guess the hope as the gamer who is pushing content out on this channel is that because the subscription base is so large, potentially, that you'll have more eyes on your, you know, the video that you submit on the Sandbox, more eyes on that in a day than you would in a week or a month on your own channel if you're a smaller content creator on YouTube. So from that standpoint, I definitely do see where there can be appeal there. Think about that?
I mean, my other concern is this going to be curated by people or algorithms? Because I would hate, and I'm sure GameStop as an entity would hate, to have this thing devolve into the kind of toxic name calling, misogynist kind of shit that we see on some of these other networks. So I want to know what they're doing to make sure that, you know, that there's something that, you know, not only that a kid can go to, but that I can go to without being called a certain name, or have to worry about fucking Jake Paul, Logan Paul, or whatever guys that just do pranks and shit like that. Like, I'm curious to see if they have a plan on how to handle that.
I don't know specifically whether they do. There is an intro video that really kind of talks about what it takes to be a contributor on here, or how things work here. But what I did see was that they're in their terms of service that they, you know, that they talk about, you know, being profane or being sexually explicit or being, you know, derogatory, racially, or, talking about anyone's, diversity, blah, 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 blah. So that, you know, they went to lengths to mention strong language about them not liking that. My assumption is that everything will be curated, and that there will be submissions that are made that just won't make the cut. And how they determine what that cut is, you know, kind of the secret sauce that you won't know. Basically, the way this works is you don't get paid for your submissions. Your submissions are part of challenges. So there are several challenges on a page or on the site. You get to vote on your interest level on that challenge. So I guess they can curate the challenges for you, and also to help them curate the challenges for themselves and determine which ones work, which ones don't. They tell you what the challenge is and what you're supposed to do in order to qualify for that challenge. Then once you do that, and they give you the time that challenge or contest is open and the top prize for that contest. So there'll be prizes available. Some of them are consoles, some of them are games, some of it is money, some of it is, like, one is a featured YouTube spot. So there are all different things that if you're motivated to be a part of this service and to use the sandbox, that you could potentially get out of it. And when these challenges end, they'll pick a winner. And I'm not sure if the winner is who gets the most views or, you know, how the selection actually works. But then they show the amount of wins that you have, blah, 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 all the stuff. You get famous, the end. Everybody wins.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. I think you also said a record by saying the word challenge like 3 million times.
Yes.
In the last thing.
Thank you.
I kept thinking about physical challenges. So I kept thinking about, like,
Double Dare?
People like putting their hands up big noses for
there you go.
Getting the flag.
Yes.
You know, out of boogers. which, by the way, I think I heard they're like redoing.
Double Dare is back.
But is it Mark? Is it different? It's a new host though, right?
New host. She's a sister.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And,
oh, wow.
Right,
I'll have to check.
Yeah, I think Mark Summers is a producer. He was definitely on the first episode.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I saw Mark. I met Mark Summers when I lived in Philly. They had like a some bar had like a drunk Double Dare, and Mark Summers was there.
Was there hosting
to,
it?
Like, host it? Yeah.
Get out of here!
Like, they charged like quite a bit of money to get into this thing. And he was just like super profane on purpose, you know, during Double. He was just like, it was like almost like when like a people would go see like Bob Saget.
Yeah, exactly.
Like after watching like Full House.
Yes.
And then they'd be like, whoa, like what's this guy doing? You know?
So, that's almost Saget's stick now. It's like,
So I totally fanboyed over Mark Summers as a, how old was I? I don't know, maybe 27 or so.
Nice.
28.
Nice.
I was like, yo, Mark, what up? So like that sandbox, I mean, I know it's been out there. Like, I saw the intro video was from about 4 months ago, but I guess since I wasn't familiar with it, you know, and like, I don't know when exactly it launched, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. I mean, again, I like GameStop having their hands and stuff, but it's got to be done right. And I'll be curious.
Yeah. So I will say this. So while you were talking about that, I looked at one of the challenges and here are the guidelines. This is a community powered by the players. They want to highlight great creators who love games. Below are a few things to keep in mind when creating and submitting your videos that will increase the chances of you being featured on the channel. Be respectful, family friendly, no logos, royalty free.
Okay.
And links are love. So be sure to include your YouTube channel link in your submission so that we can cross link your profile in the video description.
See, I like that. I like them specifically saying family friendly. Because to be real, there's not a lot of family friendly gaming content out there.
Yeah.
If I had a kid, I would probably just be sending them to the like Common Sense Media stuff and that kind of stuff. Yeah. But, you know, you go to like YouTube Kids, I guess, but I don't know if they have like gaming stuff on there. It's like I think it's good that they're trying to provide a space that's a little more wholesome than like, I don't know, say us.
Yeah, right. Well, so here is something else that they say. Remember, this is their out. Remember, these are not hard and fast rules. These are guidelines that will increase your chances of being of your content being selected for the sandbox. We want creators to make more make videos that are authentic to their personalities and show off their love of gaming in the best light possible. So, you know, so there is a chance that if the game is M-rated and if the best content based on their criteria is a little bit more vulgar than they'd like, then there's a chance and that will be the tenor of the games or the tenor of the content that they wind up curating and displaying on that channel. But you're more likely to get eyes on your stuff if you are more accessible, more family friendly, more right. than likely. Okay. And yeah, I guess there's a chance that stuff could wind up in the stores. So like if you are, when you are shopping for your next plushie or Funko Pop, and you see the GameStop TV thing, there may be some content creators from the sandbox on there.
I'll be really curious if they try to push this like pre-orders, like you guessing like, hey, have you signed up for the sandbox?
Right. Right.
You know? you never know. Never know. All right. So we want to end on a Sony note.
Oh, yeah.
So first of all, Sony announced you can finally change your, well, not yet, but that there's plans that you can finally change your PSN name. I've been Beefy Reef since the PS3. It's PS2. I don't plan on ever changing it,
right?
Because I got the beef and I'm the reef.
Yeah.
But there's some people that have names that they hate that they got like way back in like, you know, whenever PSN started.
Right.
You
know, Bill Cosby like, forever.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Harvey Weinstein, number one fan, you know? I'm glad.
Our Kelly lover.
So I'm glad that there's some people that can finally change it. But more importantly, Sony finally officially announced that they were working on their next generation console, which would be the PS. I don't know if they'd call it the PS5. Maybe they'll reboot the name. And
oh
call
my
it
gosh!
Something.
Yeah. Right.
But you know, like the Xbox One. I don't know. or what if they come out and call theirs like the Scorpio? That would be hilarious. So I just wanted to throw out just like what kind of things would get us excited about a new system. You know, like let's say, you know, it'll come out in, you know, 2020, 2021, maybe. What kind of features would get you excited to dive into a new generation in a couple years?
Oh man. What kind of features? Well, I mean, the first is high fidelity gaming. You know, there'd be no point in moving to a new hardware if I'm not guaranteed 4K60.
Okay.
I mean that's the bottom line, cuz I mean I can do 4K30 on either of my consoles now. There'd be no point in moving up.
4K6 is tough, man.
Well, you can barely
do that on PCs now.
Yeah, well then you know, ain't no point in moving up. What else would I want? I would want SSD.
Oh, very yes. I that was gonna be one of mine as well.
Yeah. I'd want SSD and a good size one. Like 2 terabytes.
I mean those 4K textures are take up a lot of space.
Yeah, so you know, SSD, you know, if we're talking a console that's out in 3 years, then at least at the very least a 2 gig SSD card. What else would I want to see? I personally would not mind losing the disc reader. So losing the ability to play discs and movies at that point. And having USB ports, I think that you can keep the form factor down, you can keep the heat down.
I like it.
You know, there are lots of benefits to that. Gigabit and Ethernet.
Yeah, sure. For sure. A couple of things that would get me really excited for it is, and this is going to be a weird one, but I really want systems to get back to this, man. Pack in 2 fucking controllers.
Oh,
give me 2
man.
Controllers.
Oh, my God.
This one controller shit has been pissing me off ever since they found out that like they could like save some money by charging you for that. Second controller, man. Just put 2 controllers in there. Come on.
You ain't getting it. Nope.
Damn it.
Yes.
I want 2 controllers.
Yes.
You know, I want that. I also want to add to your SSD. I want it to be very, very easy to switch or upgrade your SSD. Mm. I think now it's still. I think now on the PS4, it's still not as easy as I think it should be. Well, I think it should literally be like pop and play kind
well,
of thing.
if it's an SSD, they could put it in a slot.
They can. I just want them to.
Right. They could put it in a slot. Yeah. You could just slap it out and just pop the new one in and pop it, you know, and then you're done.
No, they can absolutely do that. I'm just saying, like, knowing them, they'll put it behind 50,000 screws and say you're voiding the warranty, all this shit. Like, nah, just like put it on the side like it's a, you know, like it's a laptop, you know, and just be able to do that. So I really hope that. I don't think they need to hit 4K60. But I do think 4K should be a minimum. I think they should, at that point, we should have bypassed 1080 on that console. So everything should be in a minimum of 4K. What's sort of the top tier games at 60? But I just don't believe that. I think if you aim for 60, you're going to have to sacrifice graphically a little too much on some of the top tier games, like the AAA games. To like get it to run smoothly, especially like the open world games and stuff.
Right.
You know, so I think 30 is still fine for like those kinds of games. But yeah, I think 4K should be a minimum for sure. One thing that would really excite me, and I think they could really do this because it's Sony, is have either a bundle or give you a discount on a 4K television. You know, I think that would be awesome if you bought this and like you don't have one or you want a better one.
By 2021, if let's assume that 2021 is when this console is coming out, the 4K TVs are going to be the only ones available. That what you'll see is the same thing where you see like 27 inch or 32 inch TVs that are 720p right now.
Those
will be the 1080p TVs, and everything will be 4K.
I just want them to take advantage of them being a consumer electronics company and start bundling this shit in with other stuff that you make. I think that that would be cool. And the other thing is, I don't expect them to make sort of a Switch kind of system where the whole thing is on the go. But I do think that they need to reintroduce a portable system and have some kind of versions of these games where, say, you have, you know, some kind of portable version for these games where you can like grind experience and like do that kind of stuff. So I'd love them to have sort of, I guess it would be a mix of like a Vita and like the fucking Dreamcast VMU or something,
right,
where like you have something that you can take, still play a cool game, but then you can sync that information onto the main game. I think that would be really cool. That would get me excited for sure. To be able to do it.
So, man, I'm gonna take this opportunity to talk about, to do a mini review of my PlayStation 4 Pro.
Okay.
So I love the games that I have on my PS4. They're almost all exclusives, and they're phenomenal.
Yeah, for sure.
But the PS4 Pro doesn't even come close to the 1X.
Really?
Yeah, it is.
In terms of
graphical power. So the whole 4K evolution revolution was hard to quantify before you actually saw it. And then, you know, I said last year when I got my 1X that, you know, I'd been playing a game that I'd played, you know, plenty of times on my Xbox One S on an HDR or 4K HDR TV, and had played it that night, and then went and got my 1X and played Madden, the game that it happened to be, played it again in 4K in HDR on the 1X, and it was immediately apparent that I was now playing a game at a much, much higher fidelity, that, you know, really, really made me a believer in the power of 4K and what that resolution means. Mm-hmm. I did a similar thing with my PS4 Pro, just to do a kind of a benchmark of the game that I played a lot on the Pro, prior to, on the PS4 prior to getting the Pro, was MLB The Show. And I did the same thing, played MLB The Show right after I got my PS4 Pro, and it looked better, but it wasn't that night and day difference. It definitely is a better looking game, but it doesn't even come close to the level of fidelity that you're able to achieve on the Xbox One X. It's like,
okay.
Yeah. I've
heard other people also say that because of that, like, whatever checkerboard rendering versus.
Right. And like those are things that it's doing, and maybe those are things that it does that really does make a difference between one version of a game and another, and maybe the checkerboarding is something that my eyes now are attuned to. I don't know what it is, but what I do know is that the claims that the 1X is the most powerful console ever built, and the teraflops and all the other bullshit that they talked about that nobody understands or really cares about really makes a difference. They're really, because the Xbox was always my preferred console, all of my third party games were going to be purchased on there. But now, having seen the difference, if I want those games to look the best that they possibly can on a console, on my big, you know, on my big TV, 100% of the time it's going to be on my Xbox because it just looks better. It just performs better. And it's quieter.
Oh, that's a big deal, actually. Yeah. Because even like my regular PlayStation 4 is super loud. I can't imagine the Pros.
So it's what I will say about the Pro is that it's no louder than the PS4. But the PS4 is loud. Like it's a thing that I notice when it's on. You know, like the Xbox and the Xbox One S and the One X were always the quietest, most quiet thing in my entertainment center. When, you know, if I'm not playing the PlayStation and I hear a noise, it's coming from my cable box, and my Xbox is on 24% of the, 24/7, because that's where I watch my TV. I watch my cable through my Xbox. Right. So it's always on, but if I'm going to hear a thing, it'll be my cable box with the fan blowing on that. So that's amazing. That One X is able to do all the things that it's able to do, as quiet as it is. So that is something that I hope the PS5 does. And, you know, if you get away from these drives, maybe that'll be the thing that helps it out. Yeah. I'm tired of having a PlayStation, a Sony gaming console, and having to turn up the volume on my television so that I can hear it over the console that I'm playing.
I had to do that for Spider-Man for sure. Like if I was playing like late at night when there's not a lot of noise out, I did have to turn it up because the fan was so loud. Mm-hmm. I really like your prediction. I think it's pretty bold about getting rid of discs too. I think it's time. I don't think they'll ever do it because they want to sell Blu-rays and they want to sell.
Do they
still want people to buy? Like, they still want the retailers, GameStop, and these people to be happy, you know, Walmart and these people.
I think they did that for this generation, but people have adopted. Like, people fought kicking and screaming about losing the ability to have their physical discs. But you go into GameStop and, you know, the only thing that you see in GameStop are Funko Pops, employees, and tumbleweed. So let's be real. Let's be real. Like, people are... Digital sales have, you know, when we go through this season, we go through this year, digital sales have surpassed physical sales now. I'm sure by the end of this year, a stognostication will be at 60-40 digital to physical, and where physical will really shine is Christmas time. That's when families will buy something and it aesthetically looks better for little Timmy to open or Dakota to open a box with a thing in it, as opposed to a box with a card with a code in it. That's a receipt.
Here's an alphanumeric code, Dakota.
Right.
There it is.
Make sure you type it in right.
Type that shit in.
Grandma loves you. That would be the one thing that would make me reticent to think that they'll be willing to get rid of that. But I think that people will... Now that you can, and I don't know if you can do this on the PlayStation, but the fact that on the Xbox and in Steam you can gift games to people.
Yes. Yeah.
I think
you can do that on Sony.
So you can go to, and you know, GameStop does this now with all three consoles. You can go into the store, buy a code. They will charge you the right amount of money. And they have a system where the code will spit out on the receipt for your digital version of that game. So you can trade in physical versions of a game to get a digital code for a game that you'll never be able to trade in.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, so you are always able to do that with the PlayStation 4. Just within the last 6, 8, 10 months with the Xbox, you can do that. I hope it's more quiet. I don't think Sony cares about the physical drive for Blu-rays. They still want to sell Blu-rays, but that's what Microsoft is for. They leaned into 4K Blu-rays, and Sony doesn't give a shit about that. They care about licensing that technology out.
They want to get that cut, man.
Right, as opposed to spending the money to put it into their own hardware. So I think they'll go even further and just get rid of the drives altogether.
I think it would be dope. I just don't know if they would do it, but I would love to see that happen. Like, I would love to see it happen. Like, I
right. Yeah. I think 3 years from now we'll be at a point where people just there won't be that revolt.
I think the reason the revolt will be smaller, one extra reason, is because even if you buy a disc, you still gotta install the whole thing on your hard drive. Mm-hmm. Like the seek times are just not fast enough to play it natively off the disc.
Right.
So I think before people thought, well, I don't need a big hard drive if I have everything on disc, you know. But it's like, well, you still do, because it still plays it off the hard drive.
Right.
You know. Yeah, so I think that'll help reduce the revolt a bit. So yeah, I really hope it happens, man. I think that would be a huge step for the industry and the right step. We'll see.
Yeah.
All right, man, that'll do it.
Yeah.
Why don't you give us the social media business? See.
Oh man, it's been so long. I don't know if I remember it. If you want to check us out, Spawn on Me is the place to do it on all your social media platforms. Check the bios if you want to follow us individually. Make sure you do so. SpawnOn.me is the site where you can find this episode and all of our past episodes. Find out what we're doing next. Check us out. Do all that stuff. This show is live on Thursdays on twitch.tv/SpawnOnMe. Make sure you check us out there. If you miss us there, or if we're not there like we weren't this week, every Tuesday, follow in your favorite podcatcher and download the Spawn on Me podcast. Make sure, if you're new to us, make sure you subscribe. If there's a place where you can rate and review, please do so. It does help very so much. Very so much it does. Make sure if you want to level up your Bricago-ness, your love of all things Bricago, you can go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/spawnonme, and donate as little as $1 per month and get our amazing after show, Spawn on Me After Dark. And if you have some information you want to share with us, something that is over 280 characters or whatever Twitter's limit is, you can email us at spawnonmepodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, I missed that. I missed the creepy voice at the end. All right, so that does it for another week. We will hope to be back on Twitch soon. I know we've had some tech hiccups and some things like that. But we do hope to bring it back live and have the chat and all that. The Baron of Bourbon, the Bruce Wayne of Bricago, Subby Stan, for me, Sheree Jackson, for our missing Kylie Fathoms, we say peace.